ready. Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to get started
progress.
Here.
There's going to be a two-week in advance requirement, and that has to be, you can't change your shift for 2 weeks either.
Welcome, everybody, to the, February 28th, 2023 City Council meeting. The time is 5:30 p.m. Meeting is being held at 201 West Virginia Avenue in Gunnison, Colorado, on the second floor of Council Chambers. We will begin with public input for 3 minutes for anybody that would like to come up and speak to something that is not on the agenda. And Mr. Schechter, please.
My name's Steve Schechter. I live at 912 North Boulevard Street. And thanks for allowing me to speak almost every meeting. So I want to talk to the council again about you guys need electric training because you don't have any. And I'm afraid sometimes people blow smoke places it shouldn't go. And you guys need to be able to winnow out the BS because, you know, there's lots of it out there. So I would hope that the whole council would get electrical training. Not 40 hours in the first year like everybody at GCA has to do when they're on the board of directors. But you guys really need to know the electric business because you have an electric department. If you don't want to have an electric department, let's become a franchisee of GCA again, and then you won't have to worry about that stuff. But, you know, it's really important since you are basically the regulators. WAPA doesn't regulate your electrical supplier. You do. And if you aren't asking the right questions, then nothing's going to change at that organization. It's really important that you guys know electrical through and through and can winnow out when you're being hoodwinked. Because I think you get hoodwinked more often than you should. I was at GCA, so I know when hoodwinking is going on, and it happens frequently. So please, get some training in electrical markets. It's really important. Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Have a good
evening.
Thanks, Steve.
Any other comments or input from the public on any items not on the agenda? Let's see, none in the room.
In the audience or online?
Doesn't look like it.
Nope.
Very well. We'll move forward into agenda item 3, council action items. First item up, a consent agenda.
I'll move approval of the consent agenda to include approval of the February 14th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes and to excuse Councillor Gelwicks from the February 14th, 2023 regular session meeting.
I'll second that.
It has been moved and seconded. Erica?
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
So carried.
Great. We'll move into the next agenda item, which is a municipal court update. And we've got Municipal Court Judge James McDonald.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to see you all.
You too.
Yeah. So good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to visit with you. I'd like to begin by saying goodbye and thank you to Annie Shaver, who left as our clerk in June of 2022. I am very, very pleased with our new clerk of the court. She's with us tonight, Laura Stanley. She's done an outstanding job. She's a great addition to our team. In the words that I routinely say on the record, she's a rock star, and we're expecting great things from Ms. Stanley. I would also like to shout out to our city clerk, Ms. Boucher, and to Cassie Mason, because when there's a transition, that tells you really how in control of the ball you are. Because when you're on the ball and you're bouncing, it hurts. But when the clerks are there taking care of you, you're fine. And the clerks took good care of this court. So even when we transitioned from one clerk of the court to another one, things went very, very well, and I was just really, very pleased with both Erica and Cassie. As you've seen in the report that was prepared by Ms. Stanley, Our 2022 numbers, our caseload numbers, are down across the board. A lot of the reason is that we've been down officers. 2022, as everyone knows here, was an aberration in terms of police staffing. Also, there was no parking attendance. So I want to say that the parking citations went down like 210 from the prior year. That's just the way it is staffing-wise. Statewide, some of the shifts that we've seen is that there's still the state legislature has continued to act in a challenging manner from a judge's perspective simply because they are removing tools from the judge's toolkit. Last year, they took away the OJW, which is the outstanding judgment warrant, which it used to be that if you got a ticket and you didn't pay it, well, then lo and behold, when you went to renew your license, they would be like, well, you got to pay this or you don't get your license. That is gone. So really, there's no motivation for some folks to pay. You know, good folks are going to pay it because it's the right thing to do. But a lot of folks just don't. And there's nothing to hold their nose to the fire anymore. And I apologize. In terms of 2022 caseload, I know that this council took a very vested interest in the speeding within the city as an issue. Those numbers are up. That's the sole area that I think the citations have increased significantly from the prior year. Statewide, I'm doing more jury trials for other jurisdictions. I did one in January. I did one. One was scheduled last week. The defendant did not arrive. And I'm scheduled for another one Friday. So it's a busy time. I think that really here in Gunnison, things are very well organized. And the clerk's office is really in control. I'm very, very pleased. I'm here to answer any questions that any of you might have with regards to this report, or to trends statewide within the municipal courts, or just in general with regards to the state of the judiciary. So are there any questions that the council would like to entertain?
Great report, Jim. Thanks for, and you and Laura put that. It's really great and good information in that. Hey, I just have a question on the speeding tickets, the traffic. I counted up 63 year to date. So 63 for the year. Now, is that only the tickets that go through the municipal court?
That's correct.
Okay, so there are others on top of that that are, okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. In terms of jurisdiction, an officer for the Gunnison Police Department can write a citation into municipal court, into the county court as well at the same time. If you have a state trooper, they typically only write to the county court. And if you have a sheriff's deputy within the city, they typically are going to write to the state as well. Mm-hmm. But a Gunnison Police Department officer has a choice of either writing to Gunnison Municipal Court or to the Gunnison County Court. And oftentimes that depends upon the severity of the charge. For instance, if a citation involves a DUI, we don't do DUIs here, obviously. But if it's a failure to obey a traffic control device, they have the luxury of choice, and they can go here or they can go there.
And I was reading through there, and something came up on that the city police don't make arrests. Is that? That's not right, is it?
Well, that they do in certain circumstances.
Yeah, okay, but there was I read something there that, wow, that's interesting.
Well, actually, a hot topic right now. Before the legislature, there is legislation pending at this time that addresses the police department's, not our police department's, but mm-hmm. police officers' right to arrest mm-hmm. for M2s and petty offenses. But the reality is that's really not kind of my jurisdiction. It's not my bailiwick. It's if the legislature says, okay, we're going to arrest on these kinds of charges, but not on these, okay, then that's their choice at some level.
Okay.
On municipal charges, it's a rarity that you would see someone getting arrested. And by that, I mean it would probably involve some fair levels of consumption of drugs or alcohol, or if it had been on a warrant that for a failure to appear where they had failed to appear not once but at least two or three times. So when someone doesn't show to court, I typically issue a warning. Send them a nice warning letter, invite them back to join us. We'll regroup in 2 weeks. If they fail to show again, I typically will then issue what's called a PR, or personal recognizance warrant, which says that, okay, if an officer bumps into them, pick them up, have them fill out the paperwork, and release them. The paperwork is an appearance bond saying, I promise to appear upon pain of being fined this amount of money if I don't take care of what I'm supposed to do. And only then, after the third or subsequent failure to appear, will I issue a warrant saying, okay, pick them up. And then, pursuant to the state legislature's recent legislation back in like 2018, we then have to have a hearing within 48 hours or they must be released. So there's a lot of moving parts. But not, it's a rarity where there's an arrest that's related to the municipal court.
Okay. That's where I was reading and didn't know that. That's great to know. That's it. Thanks.
Any additional questions?
No, I have a question that was sort of asked me ironically today. In municipal court, are all of the primary citations that we issue where a fine, you essentially plead no contest or agree to pay the fine. Under what conditions is a person required to appear in person?
Well, when you receive a citation, it's going to say penalty assessment or it's going to say summons.
Yep.
So if it's penalty assessment, a PA, that means they can pay it ahead of time, good to go. If it's a summons, it says you must appear on this date and time at the Gunnison Municipal Court. And so it says it right there in the citation. It's either a summons or it's a penalty assessment.
But if you don't pay before your court date, then you are required to
appear. Exactly. Thank you.
So, yeah. And what would be a typical summons that would be written directly that they wouldn't have a penalty assessment that they could avoid?
Let's say someone was naughty and thought it was a good idea to go around a bus that's flashing red. I'm guessing that they would give them a summons to appear before the court.
Cruelty to animals is a summons.
Failure to provide proof of insurance. So it's one of those things where it really depends upon the circumstances. Sometimes I think the officers have some level of discretion, and some, you know, cases really demand a summons, like an insurance thing. You can't just say, go pay this and everybody's happy, because no one's happy unless there's insurance. And there's also restitution. So if there's any type of a charge that involves an injury to a third party, so if there's an altercation and someone gets hit in the face and has to go to the doctor's office, that might be a cause for restitution. Restitution is quantifiable pecuniary loss related to the subject charge. So if the officer knows that there might be a restitution issue, in all likelihood, she or he is going to write that as a summons, because if you just allow them to pay it, you're not going to get to kind of ascertain whether or not there should be restitution.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You do a great job, Jim. We're lucky to have you. I have a question regarding drug citations, and we have Commissioner Liz Smith back there. Hey, Liz, up next to talk about our opioid settlement IGA, and there's been quite a lot of work done locally to sort of plan out what we're going to be doing with those settlement monies, and I'm wondering if there's a way we're going to be tracking the impact of that settlement through municipal citations. Do you think, you know, the type of citations you see in municipal court would reflect the impact of that opioid settlement?
It's really challenging for me to comment. The great majority of your drug-related charges are going to the county, and for a lot of reasons. principal among them are staffing for probation and the ability to supervise the post-conviction status. So in the municipal government, we don't have that type of a team that's involved doing the drug testing and following up with them. So at the state level, if someone receives a conviction for a drug-related charge or they receive a deferred sentence that has certain terms and conditions, the probation office can follow up and make sure that they're hopefully staying on the straight and narrow. We don't have that. So the great majority of your drug-related charges are going to go to the state level at the Gunnison County. Now, the reality is that every single court, be it us or the state levels or even the appellate or the Supreme Courts, drugs have an impact. So how do drugs change things here? Well, it might mean that, like, for example, in Alamosa, there's the vast majority of the cases are thefts. And there are thefts that are related to funding for drugs. We don't have that here today, you know, thankfully. But at some level, the drugs are a prime mover within the decision-making by the folks that are using those drugs. So how do we, want of a better term, calibrate the bang for the buck in terms of the opioid bucks? I haven't the foggiest notion. Now, if the council would want me to be involved in some of those panels, which are mostly at the state level, I'm certainly willing to be involved. But I think that that's one of those things where those are really going to be kind of the folks that make the decisions as to where the allocations are. I'm not one of those decision makers. But I'll do whatever you guys want me to do to try and give you better answers next year.
Right. That makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I'll just thank you for your time and the well-prepared report. Thank you for your comments, and kudos to the clerk's office as well. It does seem to be a well-oiled machine. So
I'm very, very thankful and very, very pleased. Okay. So thank you for the opportunity, and I hope you all have a wonderful evening.
You
it's nice
well.
To see you all.
Yeah, thanks so much. All right. Then we'll move into the next agenda item, which is the amended opioid settlement IGA. And here with us is County Commissioner Liz Smith.
Hi, Council. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Thank you for being here.
And Councilwoman Logan, I actually have a follow-up to your question about the measuring of impact for the opioid settlement money, and I am actually working very hard with the Colorado Attorney General's office to see if we can't get with their pot of statewide infrastructure money. They've retained 10% of the settlement money for that purpose, and I've been advocating for a statewide opt-in data infrastructure platform so that we can do just that, because we have 19 opioid regions. Many of us are taking very different approaches, and so I kind of think about it as 19 different kind of experiments across the state. So having the ability to kind of get a baseline, measure impacts of our efforts, whether they're successful or less successful, and also just keep track of the very rapidly evolving fentanyl crisis is kind of top of list. So we have a meeting Thursday to discuss that. But happy to keep you all informed as it evolves. But we're really hopeful that a kind of platform that the different regions can opt into would be the best way to kind of ensure that oversight, the statewide picture, and also importantly, data interoperability issues with other organizations at the state level, like the BHA, et cetera. So, yeah, so
perfect.
The local governments, yes. We won't be doing it, but we do hope that we'll get that support. So, yes, I'm here today with two requests. As you may have heard, the Colorado Attorney General's Office has secured additional opioid settlement money from different organizations, including, I listed them, Teva, Allergan, Walmart, CVS, and Walgreens. Like the original IGA that we signed on to, or earlier at the start of the opioid settlement, the Colorado Attorney General's office sent around to all local governments, you know, please sign on to this in order to maximize the settlement allocation by reducing the liability that those companies might continue to have for governments that did not sign on to it. So this is the same thing. There's no new IGA with the Colorado Attorney General's office. It's really just five participation forms. And Erica, can you correct me if I'm wrong, but those have been sent to the city of Gunnison. You have those?
Yeah.
There's links in your packet, and then the motion is in your agenda if you want to direct me to sign those participation forms.
Okay. So that's the process for signing on to the additional settlement monies, which we feel very strongly is in both our, you know, City of Gunnison, Gunnison County's interests, and also the state's. And that brings the total to well over $700 million that our state will be receiving over the next 19 years or so for opioid settlements. So it's enough to have some significant impact in our communities. And the second request I have is an amended opioid settlement IGA with Gunnison County, and taking us all the way back to those early days when the Colorado Attorney General's office was sending around, you know, these forms, et cetera. Many local governments decided to cede their local government allocation of the opioid settlement dollars to their regions. We are in a region with Montrose, San Miguel, Ouray, Delta, and Hinsdale. We are a geographically diverse region, and also Gunnison County has a lot of robust programming already on the ground, whereas the rest of the region does not. So it does make sense, and it did make sense at the time, I think, to reallocate that local government funding to the county instead of to the region. And just to give you a quick update on the region, and I've got the two-year plans that have been developed in paper format, if that's helpful. But it's a slow process trying to get a six-county region that is in very different places on board with a single plan. Almost everything in our plan that we've been able to agree on is stuff that is going to be deployed locally at the local level. We don't have a large regional infrastructure project. And so we are still very much in support of continuing to allocate the municipal funds from the five municipalities in Gunnison County to the local efforts that we have within the county through the Bureau of Justice Assistance Grant and also the Rural Communities Opioid Response Program grant. So that's a total of $2 million staggered each over 3 years, overlapping in a little bit there. The amended IGA doesn't change anything material to what you signed previously, but the Colorado Attorney General's office did flag some language in there as insufficient for directing whatever your local allocation is to the county. So I think that you all have been receiving it, Ben. Is that correct?
Whopping $500.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it will grow, but we can put that $500 and more to good use with what we already have on the ground. The tier plan for the region is progressing, but we are still in search of a coordinator and have had some difficulty finding somebody to buy on an application to fill that role. Other communities really need some of that coordinating work to get some new, some of these new programs up off of the ground. They don't have them. We already do. And so continuing to get the money here as expeditiously as possible is, I think, in our community's best interest. So in the interest of just refreshing your memory, I included those materials so you could see what those other grant programs are, what the strategic goals are, and what we're trying to do locally, and also compare them to the two-year plan that the region has. But I'm also happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Liz. Any questions for Liz?
Well, with this money here, I mean, people that need like antabuse and stuff like that, my understanding is they have to go to Montrose, Salida, and other areas you know, on their weekly at the beginning of their recovery, and then it's monthly and so on and so forth. Is there any way we can use that money to get a center set up here where they can go in and get tested for usage of, you know, the drugs they are, then they can get the medication to help in their recovery?
So we do have some limited medically-assisted treatment offered locally. I believe it's 2 days a week, and they were, last I had heard, trying to expand it to 3. This is something that the GRASP Consortium has been very involved with. And I think that not only locally in Gunnison County, we're seeing it across the state, the staffing issues, the need to develop the professional skill sets to serve our community is also part of the grant funding that we have in our local grants and part of the 2-year strategic plan. So while it's not perfect currently, we do have some limited services available locally currently.
But to get their help, their drugs right now, they're having to leave towns, what I'm being told. Is that in all cases, or?
When you say help for drugs, is that medically assisted treatment, or is that another? Well,
to stay off of heroin, stuff like that, I think it's called Anabuse, I believe is what they use. And it's like a piece of paper they put on their tongue, and it takes the craving away, and they're addicted to that, but they don't get the high and all that, and then they wean them off after, you know, quite a bit of time, it sounds like. But
so I do know, I'm not sure about the specific drugs that are administered locally, but we do have some of those treatments occurring here. So if it's a particular one that's not offered through the services in the community, then perhaps people are going out of town for that, but... Or if our service has been interrupted for some reason, which hadn't heard. But okay,
well, that's what I'm being told.
Something that I'd be happy to look into.
Okay, if you could, that'd be helpful.
And okay.
But, you know, it doesn't matter what profession you're in right now, you're having trouble getting help. So
we're also working on this for the jail-based services as well. Okay. So,
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Liz, I have a question. Two questions. The original MOU was also signed into place whereby all municipalities provided their allotment back to the county. Is that accurate? Crested Butte, Mount Crested Butte, and Pitkin?
Yeah, so the IGA in the county, or are you talking about the MOU with the state?
Sorry, the IGA within the county.
Yeah.
Yes.
So originally, and we did get all 5 of our municipalities, Marble, Mount Crested Butte, Gunnison, and Pitkin, to sign on to
Marble.
That.
Okay, mm-hmm. And they're presumably also going through this process with you as well?
Yes, you're just the first that I've gotten to see.
Okay, awesome. Great, no, I think that's important. Do you foresee any pushback from anybody?
I don't. I hope not. I mean, we already agreed to the same, you know, to this at the beginning. Sure. This is really just expediting the way that the settlement monies are delivered.
Yeah.
I would call it a cleanup.
Yeah.
And signing on to additional settlements.
Yes.
Okay. And then the second question, and this is just because I don't know, within one of the subactivities, there is a second medicine, I'm assuming, named Naloxone. I'm not familiar. What is that?
It is one of the medically assisted treatment options.
Okay.
And so this might, Councilman Miles, this might be where the sort of disconnect is, if there's a particular drug that some people prefer or is, you know, more beneficial in some instances, that might not be the one that's being delivered locally, but I know that naloxone has been something that we have been,
okay.
Working on. Or are you talking about the...
No, that's it.
Okay.
Yep, that's the one.
Sorry, I was just thinking...
No.
Naloxone is also the life-saving harm reduction drug, so... In the event of an opioid overdose,
yes,
the one that you deliver. So,
and that's how is that similar to Narcan?
No, I got it backwards. It is Narcan. So naloxone is
Narcan is the life-saving.
Narcan is the life-saving one, right? Because
yes.
I know Carrie came in and tried to train us all on it.
Yes.
Okay, which I'm totally in if I can.
No, that's correct. I just got them reversed in my mind just there. So naloxone is part of the medically assisted treatment, whereas Narcan is the life-saving
emergency.
One. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't know as I read it, and I guess I could have Googled that. But anyway, any other questions for Liz?
Nope.
Commissioner Liz.
Thanks for bringing the update, and it was really good to get the cleanup because there's been a lot more work done than when we first signed the IGA. So interesting to see the goals and strategies coming into play, and keep us posted.
Yeah, there is a much more detailed implementation plan that Carrie created from that document
that
you
have.
I think
that was in her packet, yeah.
No, those are her other separate grants. And just to give you a reference point, the regional allocation this year is just over $500,000, whereas Gunnison County, between these two grants, have $2 million just for our community over 3 years each. So what we have on the ground here is very significant and substantial compared to where the rest of the region is.
Well, thank you.
Good work on that.
Yeah, sure. Truly. Oh, if there are no other questions, then I believe we need...
I will move to authorize the acting city manager to sign the COAG's 5 participation forms to accept the new settlements.
I'll second that.
Moved and second. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none. Erica?
Miles?
Yes.
Bata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gowicks?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
So carried.
And I'll move to authorize the mayor to sign the amended opioid settlement IGA with Gunnison County.
And I'll second that, too.
That has been moved and seconded. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none. Erica?
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gowicks?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
So carried.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your support. Appreciate
the input.
We appreciate it.
Thank you. Very well. We'll move into the next agenda item, which is the Gunnison Valley Regional Housing Authority GV Heat presentation. And here with us is GV Heat Coordinator Gisa Michelle.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being
for
here.
For having me. Appreciate it very much. And I have a little presentation right here. But we can, you know, feel free to ask questions. You will have heard a lot of the things that I'm talking about already. This is in a lot of ways going to be a refresher, but also kind of some updates that we've been working with over last year, and then kind of an outlook going into this year. My name is Gisa Michael, and I run the GV Heat program as part of the GVRHA Housing Authority. Next slide would be, GV Heat stands for Gunnison Valley Home Energy Advancement Team. And basically what we're really focusing on is energy efficiency upgrades and doing assessments on income-qualified homes. So these are on existing structures for income-qualified homes. And there are a few programs that we're going through and that we're working on. One is the CARE program. The other one is Energy Smart Colorado. And those two I will highlight today. The other two that you see right here we're working on as well, but in other regions, mostly with other means. For 2022, we've been happy to have received $27,500 from the City of Gunnison, so thank you once again. This is just something that I kind of wanted to line out so that you know where the money has been going. Most of it has gone to the CARE program, and you as a utility with Gunnison Electric, you have an individual contract with the funder of the CARE program, and they're called Energy Outreach Colorado. And so what I did, I had additional funds available that I could use for income-qualified homes, and I also put those towards the CARE program in the amount of $2,500. So your contract was for $20,000 with Energy Outreach Colorado, and I think is again also this year. And then I added another $2,500. What we added is $2,500 going towards energy assessments through Energy Smart Colorado. And in a little bit, I will get into a little bit into detail about that. And then I spoke in front of you all in May last year, speaking about our definite need for contractor workforce development. And I was able, with your contribution, to send some contractors to a conference, and it was amazing. So it was really, really good. And it also helped leverage, I have more funding that I'm going to talk about a little bit later, it helped leverage additional funding that I received for workforce development. So that's something that is still kind of a lot on my mind, but very beneficial. So going into the CARE program, you've seen this before, and let me repeat. So this is, the CARE program is doing energy efficiency upgrades on homes that are either for tenants or for homeowners at 80% area median income or less. And what we have done since we started in 2017 with the work. Since 2019, we've kind of been established, and we've been doing about 30 homes a year. This is countywide. And so we've been adding LED light bulbs, air sealing, doing some additional energy insulation, and installing energy efficient refrigerators. The average amount that we've been spending on is $3,800 per home, and this is through a mix of funds. So the main funder is Energy Outreach Colorado. That is the main organization. Then, in addition, there's utility rebates. So it's through City of Gunnison, it is through GCEA, and through Atmos Energy. And what they have, the Energy Outreach Colorado, this is an absolute need for them, for utilities to participate in the program. And the amount that the utilities participate in informs how much one can do in the region. So I've also learned that there are some utilities that are not participating, and then this really good program is not being offered.
Gisa, quick question.
Yeah.
So under the CARE, the items you're doing, that health and safety check, would that include, like, testing for mold or lead or asbestos and things like that? Or what's the health and safety?
It's mainly flue gases and carbon monoxide. So and so what we do is we check for how many smoke detectors are installed. So we will install smoke detectors. We will install carbon monoxide sensors. And then mainly the testing is around the pipes for any kind of gases coming out.
Mm-hmm. One other piece is we do release our unclaimed utility deposits to Energy Outreach Colorado. You can choose between Energy Outreach Colorado or the Colorado Treasurer for the Great Colorado Payback, and we've chosen to fund Energy Outreach Colorado to further these kind of efforts.
So I just kind of wanted to do just let you know about a study that we've started. I am working with if you're going into the next slide, I'm working with a master's in environmental management student. His name is Jacob Hernandez. He's been working with me for almost a year right now. And what we wanted to find out is how does it really help people? Where is this really? Like, I've been working a lot with modeled numbers, and so I just kind of wanted to see what kind of effect does it have. Jacob is still interpreting the data. What he has done is he has interviewed 13 individuals. So he has gone into the people's homes, spent about 10 minutes with him, had a set of questions that he had asked. Some were quantitative and some were qualitative. I have some of the quantitative answers that I can present to you. The qualitative ones, we don't have that yet. We are also comparing or going to compare through this study what are the, were there any differences in energy use before and after the retrofits. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to find out where that's going to be at. And so the two questions that we asked, or two of the questions that we asked, how comfortable or uncomfortable did your home feel after the energy efficiency upgrades? And as you can see, over 80% of them felt either very comfortable or comfortable. And so what when I am doing these projects, when I'm going into the homes, to me, that is the most important indicator. It's actually not so much saving the energy. It is helping people have a better life in their homes. And there's a lot of there's a lot of air leakage in homes, and that just makes your house drafty and uncomfortable. And so being able to reduce that is, to me, a huge indicator. And so then the next question we asked about, well, how do you like working with GB Heat? And, you know, I don't know. It's very good. Very good response rate of 13 households. So I mean, we didn't do a really big study, but it's a good.
You weren't standing there looking at them sternly while they answered that question.
Well, I didn't do the interviews, so I, you know, personally, I removed myself from that. So maybe that's like one thing that's that's good. And the other project that Jacob has been doing is we've really kind of wanted to come out with case studies. And so this is one case study. This is a resident who lives in the city of Gunnison. And for them, their daughter has helped with setting it all up. And just hearing from them that it helps with getting seniors to get more independence. And to me, that was huge because, you know, it's just, there's so many programs available. GB Heat is one of them, and it just helps that person just have more comfort and more independence. And then what we did is I mentioned we do about $3,800 per home. This investment in that home was only $1,300. And I mean, we created a huge satisfaction by that resident. And so, you know, we did just standard things. And installing LED light bulbs, installing a smoke alarm, carbon monoxide sensors, as you asked about earlier, and doing some air sealing and some duct work. I mean, that's the basic thing that we've been doing to this house, and that's just a great thing. So you'll see we're going to be doing some more publication of these case studies in the paper and through social media and other things. It'll be this case study will be in the paper.
Have you had a chance to match up what your projects have been with the potential savings or usage of energy, et cetera?
And that's what the data, our intern is still analyzing.
Okay.
That.
Okay, so that's in progress.
That is in progress, and the report's supposed to come out in the beginning of May.
And he did obtain the releases from all of our customers to obtain that data. So that's being provided to Jacob so that he can work up those analyses.
Yeah, so it's a fun project because it's just really trying to figure out, okay, how does this work on the ground and not just, you know, we go in and out and then we never talk to people again. Going into 2022, What we have done is we have retrofitted 28 homes. Of those, there were 14 in the city of Gunnison, 14 in GCA territory. And this is for the first time that we had this, is that we had six, we had to waitlist six homes. So basically what we did this year, and you'll see some numbers a little bit later, so this year we ran out of funds. So that's what was the limiting factor. I had thought it was the workforce challenges, that because I had a change in contractors, the contractor that I had used out of Alamosa wasn't able to come anymore. And so, but we were able to rally, and I think some of that workforce development funds helping get our local contractors more up to speed has really helped that. And they really stepped up and helped make this happen. So the limiting factor at this point in time had been the funding opportunity. Mm. But one thing that I also wanted to show is that we've done about 17% in air leakage reduction. And in a house, typically through the care program, we aim for 10%. And so that's a good, it's a good achievement. So when we look at 2022 in terms of the numbers, so again, you see the 28 homes that we did. In total, the cost was $116,000. So this is only for retrofits and for the care program. And the total cost was $4,100. So this was a little bit more than I really wanted to spend on average on a home. I kind of want to go back to $3,800. So, but there was a lot of opportunity. And we also, what we do use is we use leveraged funds. So, for example, I got some funding for seniors, and then I can put in more weatherization or other non-weatherization infrastructure upgrades that are necessary in homes. So that's kind of a good, so the GB Heat funds that are available that we can leverage, that is always kind of a good bonus to help round up the house a little bit better, and not just saying we can only do this, this, and this, and for the rest we have to leave you. That's where we are at. We could have done more in 2022, but because the funds are specifically tied, like it's rebates funds, specifically tied to the different, you know, how many homes one can do, that's where our limitation was.
Now, are the six that were waitlisted going to be able to be picked up this year, or?
That is correct. So if we're going into the next slide, that is, shows us kind of the 2023 projection. And so here you see a big jump. So this year is very different. And I have now negotiated with Energy Outreach Colorado to put more funds towards the care program. And I project that we're going to be able to help 37 homes. That's 9 more than we did last year. So that's big from that kind of perspective. And what I see also happening is, because in the beginning we had a lot of, right now there's a lot of applications, I get a lot of phone calls, there's a lot of word of mouth going on. And so most of those waitlisted homes were in the city of Gunnison. So that's why I'm like, okay, let's help that demand and bring the, you know, supply those retrofits for those homes. And you know, as you can see, like, I don't know, when I put this PowerPoint together, we had 14 approved. I'm at 19 right now, so it's amazing.
Do you see an increased projection being a challenge for contracting the services, or is that?
Well, I spoke with the contractors, and they said they can do the 37 homes. I think, you know, well, I'm very optimistic. I think maybe we can do even more, but okay. But let's
let's get through 37 first.
Let's see about that. So going into 2023, the projection numbers once again, you know, doing 37 homes in total of that 23 within the city of Gunnison. Total project cost being 137,000, and then a total cost per home at around 3,700. So that kind of gives me back to my average number that I'm looking for. What you can see is that the City of Gunnison contribution has remained the same for 2023, and the leveraged funds have gone up. So this year, I have been able to negotiate with Energy Outreach Colorado because I have had some additional leveraged funds available for this year that I can utilize for this program. So the person I am speaking with, he didn't really like it that much that I said, I'm going to provide the funds. So if we see this trend continuing, you know, I think we're sitting good for 2023, but because they want to see a close connection between utility contribution and how many homes are being served within that community, you know, we may want to later on in the year have a conversation about increasing that amount of funding from City of Gunnison utility or other funds. And you know, maybe one can figure out other funds. So and then you can see right now for 2023, that percentage of GV heat leveraged amount is at 15%. In 2022, it was 12%. So it's gone up. But it's, you know, I'm raising those funds from outside sources. Does anybody have any questions so far?
No.
Okay.
I have a question. So the assessments are now $400 per blower door test, so to speak, and it used to be like 250. Is it 400 the total cost for an assessment now?
So you're asking about this Energy Smart Colorado?
Well, just in general,
so,
I guess.
So there's a different cost for assessments. There's different costs for assessments for CARE and for Energy Smart, and actually it is also at 400. So I am paying a contractor $400 for an assessment.
So is there still a possibility for someone who's non-income qualified to just pay the $400 and have the assessment done at their home to identify, you know, areas where they can increase energy efficiency?
That's a great question, and that's exactly the slide we were at.
Okay. Cool.
So this is a different program. This is Energy Smart Colorado, and this is providing energy assessments to all incomes. So anybody can apply for this program, Energy Smart Assessment Program. And the value of the assessment is $400. I mean, the person is in the house 2, 3, 4 hours, sends a report out. And so some of the funds from the city of Gunnison go towards a subsidy towards these assessments. At $250 per home. So the homeowner only needs to pay $150. That's an amazing value.
Is that for someone that's income qualified?
This is for all incomes.
Okay.
That's for all incomes. For the income qualified people, they don't pay anything for the assessment.
Perfect.
For them, for the CARE program, everything is free.
Okay.
And so basically what I have is I have 10 homes that can, within the city of Gunnison, that can get this subsidized price of $150. Last year in 2022, that was exactly the number we were at, and I have not been doing any advertising. And I don't think I really want to. It's this kind of a word of mouth thing, but it's good because it helps our contractors remain in the field and do for fee for services. So that's a really good kind of incentive to go along with. And
so when you subsidize that $400, does that take away from the funds that you have for the 80% AMI folk?
No.
Okay, so that's a different.
No, because like this year from the city, I've received $25,000, and $22,500 will go towards the CARE program, and $2,500 will go to the Energy Smart subsidies.
Okay.
And it's a good. I think it's a good investment just because it helps the contractors kind of stay in the field. Do contracts with other households kind of on their own to remain in the field to work in that area.
Are they doing this work year round, or are they doing it primarily in the summertime?
They haven't been doing it year round, and that's what I'm hoping. You know, that's I think that's why, you know, they've been doing other jobs, and so I've been trying to get them jobs through these different programs so that they can work year-round on it.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Good question.
Any other questions on this Energy Smart? Okay. So next I kind of wanted to just show you just like kind of a puzzle piece of the different leveraged funds that we have received and also received just recently. This is not the whole gamut. But Next 50 Initiative is a great organization, and they have given $16,000 to help with older adults. So I supplement that a lot, like for the income-qualified homes, and I supplement some of the work done. Oftentimes, work calls for attic insulation. Attic insulation is quite spendy. I know I have a cap of how much I can put into a home, so I've been able to put in attic insulation. And one of the seniors, actually, this summer it was so hot, and it was having a cooling effect on the added insulation was having a cooling effect on his home. So it's not just heat; it was also cooling. So I mean, that's really cool.
What is considered an older adult? What's the age?
For next 50 or older.
for the next 50.
50 or older.
50 or older. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. That's good.
Yeah.
Half we're all almost there.
Another example is this is what I like a lot is Rocky Mountain Health Foundation. And that gives me opportunities for emergency funds. And so I receive a lot of phone calls, people, and I'm trying to figure out what is their plethora of help that they can get on their homes. And sometimes I have oftentimes water breaks, pipes break. I just had it makes me so sad. I just had an example of somebody who they couldn't pay their propane bill, and then they shut it off, and then their pipes broke. And that is just like a circle that is just, you know, I'm trying to help people be up front with that.
Is that, if they have homeowners insurance, does that pay their deductible, or is that just...
Usually do not have.
Okay.
Clients I'm working with usually do not have homeowners insurance.
That's good to know.
And another example for leveraged funds, this is something, if you go to the next slide, this is something I'm very happy with. We just received 39,000 $725 from Energy Outreach Colorado, again, for specifically doing outreach. And while I am honored that people just call me and there's a lot of word of mouth happening, we have a lot of underserved people in the community who don't reach out on their own. And they do need assistance and help. And so with this funding, this is what I'm going to start spending out, doing more outreach in those communities. And for example, last year I didn't have any funds for outreach. And through CARE, we served about 11% of our Hispanic families. And that is kind of representing the amount that we have, the population that we have. But I like to go above that, and I like to go at serve 25% of the Hispanic population through our CARE programs. And so I'm hoping with this funding, it will help alleviate that a little bit more. And then this is the CHAFA funding, Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. They have provided $20,000 for workforce development and also outreach. And the workforce development piece is big because we continue to do on-site training. We continue to do training.
Is the CHAFA grant renewable next year, or is it just something that you might get occasionally?
I think I can apply once a year. I'm not sure if I get it.
some grants sort of put you on cycles that you can have it for 3 years, and then you have to go on hiatus or other things.
These grants that I mentioned, they're all one-year grants.
Yeah, but renewable or not renewable is up to you then.
Right.
On the workforce development, I guess I'm curious to know, have you at all worked with the high school and their Pathways program to potentially find some staff or people to train?
Yeah, it's great. We've brainstormed about it. We have not implemented it. Yeah, but that's absolutely on my mind. We've just haven't been able to go that route yet.
Okay.
But yeah, we wanted to just show people how to show the kids how it's done, right? Like caulking and air sealing is actually very simple. Very simple, and it would be great. Like, we were thinking about a mock wall, and then
great.
So with just letting you know, our cooperation with Western is also very strong, and I've mentioned to you the internship program that we're doing with the master's students right now. I'm hoping to be able to continue another master's students next year. And one thing that is also really new, so you've heard about electrification, and this is something, there's a huge buzzword. There's coming a lot of federal and state funding coming our way that we're hoping to attract. Just everybody kind of in this field. And so right now what we're doing is I'm working with a lecturer, Emily Artali, and she is working with engineering students. They're upperclassmen, and they're doing a feasibility study for electrification of homes that are income qualified. And, what does it take to actually get there in terms of the structure, in terms of the building, in terms of the education? We are mainly focusing on homes that are powered by propane, because that changeover is typically financially makes sense. So more to come on that one as well.
She has the $900 from the ice rink on here, which is what we're saving on the rink from what we were paying pre-solar panel, so to speak, and that just has passed through to GV Heat. And they have an interesting idea that where mobile homes that can't support the weight of a solar panel where you do kind of an energy offset, where you kind of do this community sharing of a panel in a different location. And they were hoping to use some of the city facilities for those panels to provide that those savings to those locations and mobile homes. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we are putting panels on essentially all of our city facilities this summer with our energy performance contract. But I think it's just highlights one of the really creative ways of providing power that doesn't necessarily need to be located directly on site.
And I mean, one could do a partnership like that. That's wonderful that you are doing that on your own government right. buildings. And it makes sense. One could also consider partnerships with private owners, right? Sure. To do that. They've been doing a project like that with Xcel Energy, and the tenants who receive LEAP, that is energy bill assistance, they then benefit from the reduction in their energy bills. So there's programs like that where we can mitigate and. Mm-hmm.
On the MEM graduate student, once Jacob finishes his project, is your thought to continue that level of project with to get somebody else to just take over what he's been doing?
Well, I'm hoping that to get another intern, and I'm hoping to do a different project that kind of melds in, but it's a different project. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
I
like what Elizabeth is doing with the senior center. Great trajectory, Gisa, and to do it all as a one-woman show is pretty amazing how you've leveraged people and contractors and resources, and it's been pretty amazing. So great work.
Yeah,
thank you.
Truly.
Yes, it's very exciting work. It's very necessary work. It's absolutely hits the right mark. In terms of assisting people, it may not always translate into lower energy bills, but it does assist with increasing the quality of life. And for the population that is energy burdened and that is cost burdened, just throughout. So that's why I've just been trying to, there's a lot more potential. And I am excited about the increased demand. And with this outreach grant that we're going to have right now, I would suspect the demand is going up even more. Energy prices are going up in general, and people are just needing that kind of assistance. So, I appreciate the city, collaborating with us on this, and hoping for more in the future. So thank you.
Thank you so much for all the work you're doing and for this update. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move into the next agenda item, the microgrants update, resiliency project team members, Jeannie Baylor, Celeste Alminsky, Faith Solmarsh, and Ricardo are all here.
Yes.
Thank you all for being here today.
Hi. Good evening.
Hey.
Good evening.
Hey.
Well, thanks, guys, for allowing us a few minutes this evening to chat with you. We really want to just express gratitude and thanks for your support for 2022 microgrants. It started as an idea, and we're here to present some of those highlights tonight. The Resiliency Project is super proud of the reach that these grants had this last year. The distribution was pretty flawless. We did award 10 grants, which was our goal, also the maximum. So we hit that there. As you can see in the packet, 4 of those grants went to HOAs or neighborhoods, which was our initial idea with this. Let's connect neighbors and bring the block party back. So 4 of those grants, a good grouping. We weren't too sure if it would take off year 1, but it certainly got into some neighborhoods. One of those groups had over 80 attendees.
That's so my neighborhood.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bo was there, Mario mentioned.
Yep. We were there. It was a great time. Thank you.
That group also, they used that funding to hire the Cora Band. And so that's how they used their funding. Some of those other neighborhood groups used it to purchase food, to print invitations and flyers. So we definitely hit that connecting of neighborhoods, which was great. Four of our other groups, which included St. Peter's Church, Six Points, our local Columbian community, and what was that, the fourth one? Mountain Roots and Immigrantes Unidos, they collaborated together. They took gatherings to our community. So they kind of branched out of that neighborhood. They weren't serving necessarily a neighborhood, but they purposely put together events, gatherings that were inclusive in our community and brought together groups of folks that probably wouldn't normally gather together. Reading through those applications and then those reviews of the grant when they submitted for reimbursement were really powerful, really great ways. We're really proud of how the community showed up and used that funding. Our last two grants were a bit more out of the box. One was funding for our senior gift baskets, and that was kind of spearheaded through Rotary, who does that each year. But this year, they were able to use that funding to make more baskets. They made over 35 baskets for our senior community members and add more to them, pairs of socks and other things that are a bit more outside of what the community donates for those. And then that last one is a community coat closet. So that is similar to those kind of book libraries that you see around town, only that is if you have a coat to share with the community, you put in, and if you need one, you take out. That will be housed at the food pantry, so that group has arranged with the food pantry to house it once they're open in their new location. It's not quite there yet, but once that location opens, the coat closet, which is constructed very well and weatherproof, will live there. Overview, the highlights of what we did, or what the community did. We really didn't do much, but the community did with that funding in 2022. Ricardo's going to chat specifically about how those ties were strengthened specifically in our immigrant communities.
So hi, members of City Council. I wanted to take some time to show my appreciation for your support in the 2022 microgrant cycle. With your approval for those microgrants, we were able to support a lot of organizations and groups in our community that were focused on strengthening those social ties and fostering a sense of connection for people here in Gunnison. So I wanted to take the time to highlight two microgrants that we approved this past year. As Ginny mentioned, the Mountain Roots Food Project was able to use a microgrant to work with members of Inmigrantes Unidos to plan a potluck-style event that also included tours of the Cultivemos Cottonwood and Bills Park Community Gardens. At the event, members of Inmigrantes Unidos of Gunnison, also who had worked in one of those community gardens, were able to take home produce, take home seeds from Mountain Roots that they provided. And something I remember from that potluck just was the homemade ceviche, tostadas, and just like sharing laughs with people at that event. So that was really special. A portion of the funds are also going to be going to umbrellas and picnic tables for future gardeners to enjoy there as well. In early August, the members of our community with Colombian Heritage were able to celebrate their Colombian Independence Day, and they transformed the Elks Lodge to Colombian Fiesta. So we shared arepas, we played some group games and danced to some traditional Colombian songs, and Councilman Gelwicks was also there and won one of the song games there that night.
So.
It was fixed. I didn't see those photos.
Not quite. You really weren't. It was fun.
So I think that evening was really special because during that time, individuals were also able to give testimonies about their culture and about their experiences here in Gunnison and being able to call this place home. So I'm really hopeful that we can continue to see more of those cultural celebrations and that people can feel welcome to apply for more of these microgrants, also to share parts of their culture with our community. So I would like to thank you all for renewing the microgrants and supporting us with some additional funding for this next year.
Which is now a total of $7,600.
Can't wait.
Well, microgrants. grants we've earmarked at 4,800, okay. And then some of that extra funding was so we don't pull it out of the rec budget or other budgets when we need to. I mean, we've taken ads out in papers and you know those types of things. So a little bit more for micro grants, but not quite that. I'm not ready for that.
Next year.
Yes. Yes.
The business community has participated a little bit in micro grants, and one of the ones was 6 Points celebrated their 40th anniversary by inviting all the neighbors that are around the business neighbors that are around to come out, and also community members. Mm-hmm. So it was really great, and we would love to see more businesses do little block parties. Or to take advantage of that and do business networks, block parties, congregations. That would be really fun. One way that I can help tie in to messaging that the Resiliency does is getting it out on the street. I got 2 of these left and 3 of these left, so if anyone needs it. But you'll see those up and down the street in businesses, in different organizations, and it's just a way to tie it all together and to keep that messaging going. And I believe Rochambeau helped me do this. So, okay. So we just try to tie it all together, and everyone enjoys sharing the same message.
I think you had a very successful first year.
Do you guys have any questions for us about any of the micrograms?
I've heard nothing but good things.
Excellent. It was really special for our neighborhood. I mean, with the great cause for our help.
Quadrant.
Well, we closed the street off. We they had the band there, and almost all the neighborhood came. It was.
They had some infiltrators.
What's that? Yeah. But met a lot of people I had met before, and that was just a win-win. It was a great event for us to have.
Well,
like to do that again.
One of the things Muriel really wanted to do with that was include the senior housing right there.
Mm-hmm.
And really pull Mountain
View
right.
into
mm-hmm.
your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And that worked out great. Yep.
So really a lot of this started out from COVID and just how communities that were better connected were just a lot more resilient and they had better outcomes in terms of death rates and just health in general during that, right? And that's kind of where this started.
Yeah, it's where we started, and from the first few meetings, Mario really spearheaded it. She's traveling, so she can't be here tonight, but this connection with neighbors. And, it certainly is folks you live around, and in the pandemic when we were isolated at home, that mattered so much. But also our group is, because we live in a smaller community, realizing that neighbor's term is not necessarily folks you live by, but you work by, and how we can really bring the whole community together and be neighbors. And so this was just, we were waiting for kind of the COVID parts and pieces to fall off a little bit so we could encourage gatherings. And we're there.
Great work.
Yeah.
Great.
We thank you a lot for your support. We are looking forward to seeing what the community does and the creative ways they come up with to ask for micro grants, and thank you for
just one question, just because Katie came to me in regards to the coat closet. Sounds like that is fixed.
It's yes. I think ready.
Okay.
I think we're just ready, waiting for food pantry to be open.
Sure.
Before we really share that out to the community. The closet is built.
Awesome.
And we're just, it's home
great.
Is awaiting.
That's great. For disclosure, Katie Lewinger reached out in regards to where I thought that coat closet could go. And we just brainstormed ideas. Park, is it the rec center? Is it City Hall? And food pantry was there. So sounds like they fixed it. So.
And when we got her grant, that was some feedback we gave her. We didn't want it to be in an abandoned. The money's there, it's there, and then it overflows.
Right.
And, those types of things. And so knowing Katie, and we encouraged her to try and find that spot. And when we heard it, we were like, good, green light.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a sign waiting, okay? The sign is waiting to go up.
Awesome. I've got a coat.
Just a quick question on that. I know that various coat drives that there, unfortunately, are a few people that give you things that probably should not be shared for a variety of reasons, some which need extra attention to be shared. Has anybody come up with a monitoring system for it yet, or is it just see how it goes and then work from that point?
We've asked, it's the humanitarian posse, you know, which Katie Lewinger really takes the helm of, and so we have asked her that be part of this. We didn't want to put money towards something and then all see it out of the corner of our eyes thinking, how does this work? And so I think sitting on a lot where there are folks there will help. There's parts and pieces of see how it goes, but the humanitarian posse has assured us when we had questions from that grant that they will be monitoring and taking care of
it's also worth mentioning, Jim, maybe this helps a bit, but the closet itself, I haven't seen it, but it's movable. Mm-hmm. And Western Lumber has committed to moving it to wherever needed at any point.
That's not the part I'm talking about. I mean,
well, no, but I think it adds to it. If it can be in a place where it's constantly monitored, yeah. It absolutely would have that level of...
The food pantry is an excellent idea. Whether it's a perfect location or there's a better one, don't know yet. But you just have those things of where certain things sit there forever. It's perfectly fine. But, you know, lime green, nobody wants, or whatever. You know, it just...
That's
for whatever.
Batman.
Yeah, well, you know,
I wore one yesterday.
Yeah. I had a sport coat double breasted that was that. I do not have pictures, so don't worry about it. But anyway, there are things that, you know, that happen in that situation, and if things don't look orderly, then people get hesitant about using them. That's my point.
Well, thank you all so very
thank
much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Truly.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Need a heart?
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll move into the next agenda item, which is the street sweeper purchase. And here with us is Public Works Director, Mr. David Garner.
And Mike. Thank you.
Rogers. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. So I'm coming before because I need to buy a street sweeper. This is going to replace the 2003 model that we have. It is in the 2023 fleet replacement schedule. We were able to find one through our Sourcewell, which is our government way to purchase equipment competitively. We can receive a $28,500, which is a pretty good trade allowance for the current model that we have, creating a net purchase of $264,180. And that's much less than the $400,000 that we have budgeted for the project, so for the equipment. So, as you know, street sweepers are important. It's how we keep our streets clean, and it's important that we have good operating equipment that we can rely on day in and day out for these sweepers. So my recommendation is we take advantage of this good price and go ahead and get this piece of equipment replaced as scheduled.
And is there a reason this wasn't on consent agenda since it's already approved?
I think it was just because of the absences so that you could all vote on it.
Rather than pulling it off.
And yeah.
Consent agenda.
Typically, we would like this on there because it's already been approved in the budget. And just one point of clarification on the actual motion. What we're needing is a motion rather than the 264-180 that's in there. We need the authorization for the entire 292-680. That is the net amount, but we still, the expense side is the 292, and the trade-in is a sale on fixed assets, which is the revenue side. So if you would please, whoever makes the motion, include that higher number of 292-680.
Well, move to approve the purchase of the 2023 Global M3 Mechanical Street Sweeper in an amount not to exceed $292,680.
I'll second. Question. When we, that picks it up and holds the whatever they pull off the street, yes. Batman, et cetera. What do we do with the residue, and is there any recycling use of it, or is it something that we have to dispose of?
We dispose of it over at Public Works. We have some concrete bins that we dispose of it. What goes, where does it go after that?
It's landfilled after that.
Landfilled, yeah. Okay.
So eventually it ends up in the landfill. I would guess it would be almost impossible to separate out what would be reusable.
A lot of plastics and oil and stuff that we can't compost, so.
A little bit of everything. But we do, we have those concrete bins that we put them in there.
It's similar to grit that comes out of your car washes that also ends up at the landfill. Yeah.
And I was hoping that maybe we could save on some sanding cost. Probably trying to recycle it costs more than buying new.
Probably would be.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Very well. Any other questions or comments? The motion is moved and seconded. Erica?
Logan?
Yes.
Gilworth?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Marla?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, then we'll go right into the next item, which is the compost master plan.
Yeah, so this all started. The compost pad that we have out at the wastewater treatment plant is old and brittle and does not really good. It's not compatible with trying to contain our storm drain in there, which we are supposed to do that, because it just leaches through the cracks. So we had that in the original project, the wastewater treatment plant project, to replace, but we pulled it because we were trying to keep our budget intact for that project. So we're hoping that we could find other ways to pay for that. It's pretty expensive. So we did apply for a CDPHE grant through their waste division last year, I think.
Yep.
And it got denied, and probably for good reasons, because we wasn't real clear on what we were trying. We wanted to replace the pavement, but I think CDPHE wanted to see more and more detailed on looking into the efficiency of the operations and stuff like that. So
specific plans.
Very specific plans. So we went back, learned from that, and so what we want to do is we've worked out a scope of work with JUB engineers, who we have already an on-call engineering contract with that we use from time to time for certain things that they are very qualified to do. And we worked out a detail where they can come in and really do an efficiency analysis of our operations to make it more streamlined. And also our staff, Mike, and I have to give Mike and his staff credit, because they want to see, I mean, they've learned from how to do compost, and they've learned that, you know, with proper aeration and different methods, and they've come a long way since I've been here on how they do compost and make it more efficient, but they want to really step it up to the next level and put in a sophisticated aeration system. They already have blowers out there at the plant, so there's no reason why we can't go ahead and use that. You're already monitoring your temperature by radio, or has it?
Wi-Fi. Yeah, temperature probes.
We want to just move this up to the next level. So, and I think the CDPHE would like to see us do that as well. So we and Erica's staff helped us present a request of DOLA for them to come up, and they have put $25,000 into this project to help with this effort. So we're going to take that $25,000 plus what Mike already has budgeted at the wastewater treatment plant compost, his compost division, to develop a more specific plan and operation and come up with recommendations and stuff. Everything that we think CDPHE is going to want to see, plus we want anyway, because we want to do it. This is probably going to be a big project when it's all said and done. I would anticipate it being 750 plus, maybe even more. We want to apply through the same division, the CDPHE Waste Division, or there's some other grants out there. Have you looked at wind grants and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's different water smart grants.
So we want to really go after some grants for this. We know we can't afford it just outright, so we're going to have to get some grant funds for this. But this is going to be the seed that gets us there. And we know we've got some more design and engineering to go to develop those plans comprehensive to a level where you can bid it out. But this will get us on the map as far as getting there. It may be a 3 or 4 year project, but at least this is a start for us, and we'd like to go ahead and proceed with JUB as our engineer on this, and coupled with the $25,000 that we have from DOLA. So if you got anything to add on that, Mike?
Yeah, this document's just going to serve as a good, you know, grant document as we apply, so we can be more successful in funding it. So, yeah.
Is there any advantage to, I guess, extended notions? I know that in some cases compost using wood chips facilitates various things, and of course we run the wood chipping area and so forth. Is there any use of that in this possibly?
Yeah, so that was part of the waste diversion grant, is to not take those wood chips and landfill them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to kill two birds with one stone, when we're redoing the pad out there with asphalt, we could put in aeration instead of the plastic tubes that we throw away every time we produce a batch. And so, yeah, that was a huge part of it. They just wanted more in-depth information on the project.
And also, we're running out of room out there, Jim.
Yeah.
So part of this, what I'd like to see is how we could utilize some of the land that we have out there to maybe store chips in a way that's compatible with state regulations, and or maybe even expand the operation site footprint. But we're kind of limited on where we are. But I think there is some opportunity to do that. I'd like to try to really look at all of it, look how we do it. I think we do a good job with it, but, you know, we're never satisfied. We want to see if we can really get it.
Yeah, and I don't know whether there's any interface that might work with Western and some of their composting efforts as well that would... I know if you're dealing with single source composting, that's not the most desirable end product, and that may be at least something to think about. I don't know whether it's feasible or not.
You know, the MEM program has been out there numerous times. They really like what we do out there, and so we would definitely.
Because typically that's just taken to the landfill as biosolids, correct?
Exactly. That's what you do. Like a lot of, and I read these publications all the time, these wastewater facilities, they don't convert their biosolids to Class A acceptable quality biosolids. So what they have to do is landfill. That's what I used to have to do back in the day. So it's expensive. And you have to dewater it, or you can inject it, landfill it. You know,
and then you got the methane monitoring and all of that.
It's a lot. Yeah. And so what Gunnison does is really remarkable, to be honest with you. We're just going to take it to the next level.
And I was just thinking, at least some of the discussions I've heard, they have some composting that is difficult for them to find suitable use with.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, and it has to be converted because the state won't allow it to be agriculturally used unless it's converted to the Class A, and that's where you have to go in and dry it
and
kill the pathogens and
test it for metals and
all that stuff. And he has to submit annual reports. I don't know if you do it even more frequently, but I know he has to test it and has to submit the lab analysis and all that kind of stuff to prove it. So it's a benefit to him because he doesn't have the expense of having to landfill it, and it's a benefit to the community because you turn into toxic material into a beneficial use.
Yeah, and something that our community at least accepts. We don't have the big education problem that many communities have.
Exactly, and I had that where I came from, is they didn't want to, even the state didn't want to allow me to sell it. I had to give it away.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, it's, Colorado is, you know, way ahead of most states on that kind of stuff. So
thank you.
Yeah, I think certainly countywide there's interest in composting. So I don't I don't know if in a study like this they would look at how big we can go with it or involving other partners or if we're just purely sticking to Gunny Gold. But I think if we're spending that this kind of money on a, you know, compost upgrade, I want to make sure we're doing it as big as we can, really. Right.
I agree. The more partners we can add it, for sure.
Yeah.
Benefit.
So maybe talking to John Cattles or, yeah, Western. I know they have their rocket composter and stuff like that, but it's definitely
we have
waste,
given them.
Waste diversion. And I saw a really cool study recently in Telluride. They're paying people $30 an hour to dig through all of the trash that Telluride has received to see what could be recycled or composted, and it's something like 80%
wow.
of the
oh,
trash.
Really?
Yeah. So, and that was a just recent. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, not commercial, but also.
That was a recent article I saw. I could dig it up.
I would like that. Yeah, I would like.
But
to
yeah,
see.
I think you know, nice. Waste diversion is a really. Clever tool we have here just because we're so rural with our recycling and everything that it's very expensive for us to throw things away and haul them out of the county. So looking at building a compost facility or I don't know.
You know,
I just
one
think
thing.
If we're investing six figures in something that we should you know, be thinking outside the box.
But the biggest cost is going to be the pavement removal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we really need, you know, right now. But why not go ahead and try to look at the efficiency of this thing and see where we can improve, you know, because.
Make better use of all the space we have out
there. That's what I say. Yeah. So I think it'd be a good way to move forward with that. We'll see. But, you know, we're already. Practically 100% renewable out there because everything we do is turned. We like the liquid is going back to the river.
Mm-hmm.
The solids are turned into an agricultural use. So it's pretty spectacular what you guys have been doing for a long time. You know, so this is pretty good.
They said only Batman goes to the landfill.
Right.
Little figurines that come down and get caught in the wires.
All right.
I'll move to authorize Public Works Director David Gardner to sign an authorization for additional services with JUB Engineers under the current on-call engineering service agreement to develop a compost planning document for a cost not to exceed $58,100.
Second.
Motion has been moved and seconded. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none. Erica?
Goix?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yeah.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Really appreciate it. Okay. Let's finish out the last two items, and then we'll come back for report. Or let's get through the next one and see how we're feeling. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance Number 2, Series 2023 on second reading.
I'll introduce Ordinance Number 2, Series 2023 on second reading, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, approving a major change to an existing planned unit development for the Lazy K PUD, and I'll move adoption of Ordinance Number 2, Series 2023 on second reading.
Second.
Thank you so much. Yes, you did.
Well, you don't have a motion without a second.
Here with us, no. Online?
No.
I think, no. Ben?
Anton was going to be on there, I think, but...
he might.
I think this is just second reading on this.
Yeah.
We had a couple of items of comment that were submitted via written letter at your last meeting. Erica, have we received any additional information about this? I have not as well, so it's really just a matter of going through the motions. And
any questions, comments? Erica.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Cowards?
Yes.
So carried.
Is that what that saying means, going through the motions?
Yeah, it? There you go.
I never thought about that.
No, that can't be.
Going through the motions?
It's got to be more.
Does it?
Ordinance number 3, series 2023 on first reading.
I'll introduce ordinance number 3, series 2023 on first reading. It's an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, establishing utility availability of service and fees, and I move to adopt ordinance number 3, series 2023 on first reading.
I'll second that.
Very well.
I have a question. Certainly the intent is that this is where services exist with structures either habitable or uninhabitable, but structures in a property that was previously developed.
Correct.
And property which is not developed would be excluded. And that's my understanding. The notion behind it is part of it is to make sure that we have equalization of contributions to overhead, but also the notion that letting buildings just sit there and deteriorate or sites not being utilized when we have housing crisis to give some incentive to people to do that as well. The question I have is if somebody ends up with a building and a structure and they come under this, is if they bulldoze it or take the structure down to bare ground, quote unquote, not necessarily removing the pipes or anything like that, does that exempt them from coverage here? And that's so I don't want to incentivize people to destroy housing. That's
right. And so I think the key here is the way this is written, and you are correct that you could avoid these fees, and really the essential piece is removing that service line. So there's a little bit of different wording depending on if we're talking about electric, water, and sewer versus the refuse, because the refuse requires that it's a residential structure because we don't require you to use commercial. So you have to have refuse available to that parcel and a structure. So in that situation, you would have to bulldoze the structure itself. For an electric, water, or service line, the trigger is the service line. So if you physically had that sewer service line removed, or the water service line removed, or the electrical lines, then yes, you could avoid those fees because you wouldn't be, you know, coming under the auspices of what's allowing us to levy the fee. And that's a lot of work. You'd be taking those steps, and I think what we would require is that you would have to pay that tap fee to reconnect because now you're no longer tapped into the system. So you've really got to be making a either permanent or very long-term decision for your property that goes on, you know, for the
because
future that would prohibit you from wanting to take those steps unless you really were, you know, you bought your neighbor's house to provide yourself a bigger yard and open space, for instance, and you weren't going to develop it, then you could avoid these availability fees in that manner.
No, but it would cost, you would have to bear the cost of the removal.
Correct.
Which would be more than probably paying this over an extended period of time.
Correct.
I just wanted to make sure that...
And it's obviously something we wouldn't encourage people to do.
No. But I would assume that if there are questions about what was there, that what exists in our official minutes would be a reference point for somebody who came in and said, hey, I took down the structure, I don't owe this because it's now vacant land.
Right.
Now, it may be vacant for property taxes, but it's not vacant for this service access.
Correct.
And I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record.
And I just want to make sure that we go through this. It's very simple ordinance. I mean, it just is an enabling legislation that would be coupled with a fee resolution change that would come with second reading, which is scheduled for, I believe it was the, not the 7th, but it's the 28th of March. 28th,
yeah, it has to have publication time.
You know, I know that we had some discussion. I want to make sure the council is comfortable with the ordinance, that there are some other things that weren't necessarily related to your original, you know, goal of addressing or at least disincentivizing the people that just have an uninhabitable or unoccupied residence and trying to put that into active use in the community. But it also does address some other issues that we had, that while they seem a little unrelated, they all result in an availability of service fee for a property that's unoccupied. And so I think it does fix some operational challenges that we had simultaneously. It makes it so that people that are operating short-term rentals are paying their fair share into the operation of the system. So I just wanted to make sure there that the council felt comfortable with the premise behind here. It's a fairly simple ordinance. There's a lot of whereases about what it's tackling, but the actual code additions are pretty simplistic.
It's straightforward, I think.
I've got two questions, unless somebody wants to jump in. The first is kind of verbiage and maybe to Kathy really, but in the six whereas we specifically outline drawn a kilowatt of electricity, delivered a gallon of sewage, or generated a yard of refuse, but we just state any water. Do we want to be cautious about the amounts that we're stating here?
Because
we could just say drawn electricity, sewage.
We could remove the references to sizing. It originally had used drop a drop of water, which seemed kind of sarcastic, so I removed that. But I didn't really think about then, you know, the gallon or yard of refuse. And I think that's a valid point.
Yeah. It's
just to simplify. If you're using the service
there's a loophole,
in any fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't use a gallon.
I used half a gallon.
Yeah, and it's a whereas, so it's not
it's
not the ordinance itself, but I do think that could be a little cleaner.
We could clean that up for
So that ties into then the question that followed up in my head, which is, let's say they drew a drop of water, or were there for 3 weeks and generated half a yard of refuse. What kind of enforcement mechanism are we going to have around this?
Well, they just get a bill.
Yeah,
it's going to be the same as anyone
to service,
yes, that has service.
The bill will be there.
And then if there's non-payment on the bill, then we have the ability to tax lien your property.
Right. Okay.
So, for one half gallon?
For a quarter yard of refuse.
Or none.
Okay, that makes sense.
In the ground, as they say.
Yep. Perfect. Yep. All right, no further questions from my end. Anybody else? The motion has been moved and seconded. Erica?
Miles?
Yes.
Bata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Galwitz?
Yes.
Reber?
Yes.
So carried.
And with that, we will move into staff and council reports, and we'll begin with city attorney.
Yes. So, and I think Eric is going to ask you guys more specifically about CML. But I would like to go this year, and normally you guys split it with Mount CB, but I resigned from representing them, so are you okay with just sending me?
Well, I can't go this year, so you can have my half-seat.
But the other thing is it's also scheduled on a council meeting. It's
Well, that's
Sunday,
what Erica's going to ask about, but I'm just asking about the dollar spending. Yeah. To send me there.
No,
who better than
it's
our lawyer?
Important for
who better than our lawyer to go see this thing.
All right. Just wanted to make sure we're good on that.
I don't like the location. So you got body armor.
Yeah, I know, right? Well,
it's at the airport.
Oh, it's good. It's a brand new facility. Okay.
It's the middle of nowhere.
Oh. Stay on campus. You'll be okay.
Okay. Okay.
You don't need a motion or anything. Do you?
No, it was just a question.
It's a procedural item.
It's always been split 50-50 previously in that obviously, I don't think they'd pay it if I submitted it this year.
You also have the benefit that my understanding that the CLETA in September from CML is going to be held at Crested Butte.
Oh, that'll be a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah.
So, okay.
We won't let you have a hotel for that one.
Well, cheap.
You get to ride the bus.
Yeah. I'm going to ask again when October comes.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. Teasing. But yes, right now the conference for attorneys that's held in the fall will be in Crested Butte.
Okay. Good.
My understanding is that the CAMU meeting may be held in Gunnison come fall as well.
Hmm. Yeah. Ooh. All right.
Yeah. Those aren't in concrete yet, but it's interesting that we may have some things in our backyard this fall.
It's not busy. Great. Thank you, Kathy. Erica?
And just to follow up with that, that CML conference is the 25th through the 28th, and so we're looking if we wanted to reschedule the council meeting from June 27th to, I'd recommend maybe June 20th, if that would work.
Yeah. I think otherwise, it's the 4th of July.
Yeah, and that doesn't work.
How many people are planning to go to CML?
Jim and Kathy.
Jim and Kathy.
So the 20th of June, is that what we say?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the alternative date.
Yeah, and I could zoom in, but Jim doesn't have that legal ability as of now. So you'd have to miss the meeting.
Which...
I already have a meeting on June 20th. Do I have any days?
The meeting's in June, or the 13th and the 27th.
The 13th?
Of June.
Oh, yeah. My God.
you goofed up your calendar.
How embarrassing.
Not really. It's 2 months away, so don't
I think worry. That makes sense.
To reschedule.
Yeah, to earlier.
Yeah, the week before.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on the calendar?
And then, just as you can see, for March, we do have a couple of important meetings coming up there. Sounds like the majority of you have been attend RSVP for the One Valley Leadership meeting for their recovery roadmap for Thursday, March 12th. And then just make sure you're saving the date for March 27th or March 21st from 1 to 3 for the joint session with the county and the consultants on the 3-mile plan. And then also that evening at 6 p.m. for the open house.
And thought that the leadership was on the 2nd.
The 2nd?
Yes, it is March 2nd. This is okay. Thursday. Sorry.
And they did make a specific reach out, just that if at all possible, if you all could make it. Bo, I don't know if you...
No, I responded. Yeah, okay. So that's on the 2nd from 1 to 3 or 12 to 3.
12 to 3:30.
Yeah.
11:45, they want us there.
That's so you get...
If you want lunch.
Okay.
Yeah, if you RSVP.
At the library.
If you want to get one of 3 parking spaces.
Well, hey.
And then I just also wanted to, you've probably noticed that the slow down signs that are hanging up over the highway, they've sort of seemed to hit the end of their life today with the wind. So I'm going to ask Will to pull those down. Would you like me to redo those? Is there any different wording?
I think we're
like?
About to hit our spring wind season.
Yeah.
So
maybe we can wait till the summer, but
wait
I just
until
wanted
summer.
To...
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I had received comments about the verbiage on it.
I received
a comment from Celeste, who she had one of the business owners didn't like it either. So we can certainly redo them with something that's...
Yeah.
I think people should slow down.
Yeah.
I
can think of...
We're not...
Slow down, stop, enjoy our town.
Yeah, something, but...
Our 25...
Hey, that was good. Why'd you say slow down?
15 miles cost
town.
You
down, stop,
above speed limit cost you extra.
Yeah,
yeah.
Money. There you go.
Erica, slow down, enjoy
our
town.
Okay.
But slow down massive and then tiny little. Yeah.
Our dollar signs have been.
So we'll take a little break and then once our winds calm down a little bit, go ahead.
Sponsor us.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
How people interpret things is. Always amazes me.
And then I hope everybody saw that we finished up the snowplow contest.
Oh,
yesterday.
Yeah.
And so those final results were posted on Facebook today.
And what won?
Our number one vote getter was Les Lipowski.
Les Lipowski. Very nice.
So
that was a fun contest.
Also had, like, Gunny, Thaw Enforcement,
Snow Beast.
Snow Beast, Blizzard Wizard. So we had some good ones in there.
Get a wizard's hat for whoever drives the Blizzard Wizard.
And are you all tuned up for Thursday, Friday, Saturday night?
I'm ready to all go. Good, good. Why don't you run a son of a gun?
I'll be there the last day.
I'm all excited. Right. Please come and enjoy your community.
Thank you so much, Erica.
You're welcome.
Ben, anything to add to your written report?
No. You might have noticed the federal earmarks for the water treatment plant. We're trying to get a meeting set up with Senator Bennett and Hickenlooper for the congressionally directed spending benefits that they have the discretion to allocate, which would go a long ways toward helping our water treatment facility. And I think we're asking for $4.5 million. We're going to try to meet with them in person, but also I was hoping the council would be okay with Diego signing a letter of support as mayor for that as well, just to supplement our packet. David has been working hard to get a lot of letters of support around the community to help us bolster our request. So that's the first item.
Did we... Is that something that Upper Gunnison would support?
I think requested in Sonia's. Yeah.
Sonia Chavez has agreed to do that, and also Brad Bach of Western. And only need two, probably get four, but I need one from the city.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, so as long as there's no issue brain with that, we've got something drafted up. And then also, Leah Morrison has requested from the RTA a letter of support to be signed by the mayor, and the clerk's office has prepared that for a second daily bus for the CDOT Outrider route from Denver. The current route is often at capacity, so just a letter trying to get that second bus, unless there's any concerns from council.
Yeah, it would be for the one leaving CB around... What would it be, like noonish to one?
Yeah, there'd be, so you could actually, there'd be an evening run, a morning run, evening run, yeah. So
both of them terminating in CB, or?
Yeah, they would, yeah.
That's what I understood, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that there was some concern expressed at one point by I don't know who on the distance traveled from Denver all the way to CB and whether that caused problems for drivers or not.
Well, they're going to, with the new facility we have built up there, that I think they're going to be lodging those drivers up there. I'm not positive. Do you recall?
Yeah, they'll be up there, and then if I remember correctly, when once we get
Montrose.
The Montrose and the bus that starts up there, we'll drop off, and that driver will go to Montrose, and the other one will go from here.
Okay, so the combination of Montrose.
They haven't worked out for the hour, so.
Yeah, they got to meet on time. Otherwise, they've got problems.
And I also don't know how often this happens, but I took the bus a couple weeks ago, and they do switch the drivers, too. I don't know if that's a constant, but they might change drivers here and there, too. But, yeah. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
And then, unless there were questions on any of the other items that there was a couple follow-ups for specific questions.
You know, Ben, I got just a question about the hybrid vehicles that we were talking about the other week. I did a little research and found that it appeared that the hybrids get better gas mileage than was reported to us. They were that information I sent to you and I sent to Diego also regarding
the interceptors.
Yeah, the interceptor vehicles. And I just wanted to make sure that, is that what we're getting? Or are we getting the one that only gets a gallon and a half or a mile and a half better?
I think what Keith was trying to say is that on paper, yes, the mileage is on a machine for testing purposes. The mileage is better, but what we're seeing is a little bit less than that because a lot of the time is spent idling while they're sitting and, you know, observing traffic or...
He said when they're idling.
But if it's a hybrid, they're not, right?
Yeah, he said when it idles, it's an electric.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I was just, I did some research on that and found that information. I thought,
that's have the interceptor models.
Okay. So hopefully we're getting the 22 or 3 mile per gallon instead of the 11.
I would think so.
Everything's affected by altitude and conditions.
Yeah, and I think even when they are idling, they are, especially with our cold and the efficiency of a battery in a cold weather environment, that the gas engine is kicking in. But I think we probably could have better records on being able to assess that savings.
I was just a little disheartened when I saw that the gasoline was 11 and the hybrid was 12.7 or something like that. Yeah. Going, what?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not much of a savings for that extra.
Well, at the price of gas right now, it could be.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah.
Would you like us to do some more follow-up on that? Or
I'd be interested. It is what it is, you say?
Or are you satisfied with basically the sticker?
I'd love to tell the people that, you know, we're buying hybrids and they're getting better than 12 miles a gallon, that they are getting a 22, that if you do the research on it.
It also seemed like he got those numbers pretty quickly, that I don't know if he really had time to review them as well.
Right. Okay.
Meeting, so. Well, and isn't the fossil fuel reliance, too, that you guys are working against, you know, so just gas mileage isn't the only factor involved.
Right, but, I mean, that's something that we can relate to pretty easily, you know.
Well, the thing that I think is most impressive at the present time is Consumer Reports on vehicles. Hybrids are the most efficient and least breakdown, and the pickup truck that they're driving is the worst out of the six classifications that they used. Mm-hmm. I think that's a point as well. We've had good luck with the hybrids so far.
Yeah, certainly on reliability, which is a key factor for a police vehicle.
Yeah.
I would like to see that.
Okay.
I'd like to. We can just see. Are they getting the 20 plus miles per gallon? Are they getting the 12 or whatever it was? So reported. So anyway,
Okay. Anything else?
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
We'll move to our Western liaison, if still online. Yes, Casey, thank you for joining us virtually.
No worries. The only thing I have to report on tonight is that the MBS in Rural Community Health is starting a research project towards the elderly and their mental health, especially after COVID. A lot of the students were seeing that there was trends in research towards the younger population and not so much towards the older population. And so hopefully in the next coming months, we'll be able to see how Gunnison's elderly population's mental health is, especially after the pandemic.
Great. Thank you, Casey. And kudos on the opening of the food pantry to the Western. That's a big step.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move into city councilors, and we'll go left to right today. Jim, anything to add to your written report?
I did share via email some follow-up information on the work employee, whatever you want to call it, the rights.
The bill.
In terms of some reasons that people were pushing it as well as problems with it. My personal opinion is that since it's bouncing from committee to committee right now, probably will not make it out in its current form in any sense. I provided that information. If you want more information, I can dig down through the bill, but it's in its third committee hearing in the House. And it has a fairly large fiscal note on it of over $250,000. So it's got issues and it's an uphill climb. Mentioned earlier that I am signed up for CML thanks to help from staff. Despite being a life member, they don't allow me to sign up for those things. Their new technology person believes in locking all doors. I didn't learn that way. But anyway, that's there. There's quite a bit of information there on various bills. If There's a lot going on. The big thing is that some of the major things that would impact zoning and planning regulations are in draft stage and not in bill numbered stage. And so if you're familiar with the legislature, here towards the end of this month, the long bill will be introduced, or the set of appropriation bills. One time it was called the long bill. There's still a long version, but it's all split out into higher ed and so forth down the line. That tends to be very hectic. And it looks like a lot of these large bills will come through affecting zoning and so forth will hit the same time, which means it'll be very challenging for individuals to trace. Did make some contacts and shared that with staff. That's not listed there as well. But so a lot of things happened. It was a good conference this year. Happy to answer any additional questions you have about any of the bills that are present. One bill that people were excited about that would guarantee the right of people to buy gas, natural gas, that died in committee.
Thank you, Jim.
Mallory?
Let's see, I've had a lot of strategic planning. We had a strategic planning meeting for the store committee of just getting all that updated, and it's still kind of in draft form. The Gunnison Stewardship Fund has been doing very well. We have contributed, or we have $250,000 that has been contributed from Stewardship Fund partners that was leveraged to $1 million. And the store committee was able to fully support all six project proposals that we received this year, which was Gunnison Trails, Crestview Mountain Bike Association. There's a underserved youth trail crew that works near like the Ragged's Wilderness, helping the Forest Service with bathroom cleaning, things of that nature. Housing Authority, we also had a half-day strategic planning meeting, which was sort of a pre-strategic planning meeting just to sort of get all of the current board members and ED and staff in the same room to talk about, you know, what are the current services we offer and what sort of strain do they put on the organization and what best serves our community. So we'll use that information to move on to a more facilitated session, which should be really good, but very encouraged with the way things are going there. And the observatory, we approved our season schedule and we'll be doing some strategic planning and capital replacement planning there as well. And let's see, I think that's all I've got. Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Mallory.
Just remind everybody I'll be gone March, and hopefully I'll be back by the 11th of April, but if the roads are bad, I may not make it. And I'm excited. Bo and I, at a meeting the other night, was contacted and talked about the building permits and ADU costs of water and sewer taps and all. And since then, I've received quite a few phone calls and all. So what I would like, once I get back, if we could find out what that has actually gone up. I mean, I find it hard to believe what people are telling me that ADUs or to put one in, water and sewer taps and permit fees is going to be around $65,000. And then to put in restaurants and stuff with water and sewer taps, a laundromat, whatever, would be around $250,000 in permits is what I was told.
We can take a look at that. I think some of those were concerns about the cross-connection policies and routing of the actual connection lines can't be daisy-chained through the existing residence and must be wide off the front from the curb stop or around where the curb stop is for a variety of reasons that's in the requirements, and that might be part of the issue, but we can take a look at that and go through it.
But, you know, that wasn't our intent when we was doing this, is to make housing sure. unaffordable. So yeah. if there's a way we can mitigate
the health yes. and metering issues exactly. while still keeping that affordable, we can take a look at that.
And that's kind of what we talked about, mm-hmm. yeah. so... And so just, you know, but you know, sometime in the future, but I'd like to be here. So if I get asked again, I have the answer. Okay. I don't want to miss that meeting.
Sounds good. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Jim.
Whoa. Yep. And so we also had an RTA meeting, and they're kind of fun because it's just so much good news. I mean, as far as this group is concerned. Airport is operating with no problems at all with the weather this year. They did lose two flights, but that was Dallas's fault, so I guess. But other than that, there's been no issues with the Gunnison Airport, which is kind of nice. the JSX airline, which flies to Dallas and Austin, people are very happy with that. On that airplane, you can bring almost anything with you. You can bring your dogs on board. You can bring your bikes on board. You can bring your skis with you, whatever you want. I think it's a 55-passenger plane that has 30 seats on it, so there's lots of room on there. Sounds like but I've also checked, they're quite pricey. American Airlines will not be flying this summer, just FYI. to buses. January, we set a new record, 41,000 passengers in January, up 64.5% from last year. Every month in the last 12 months has been a record. RTA is just doing great with the bus service. We are going to get two new buses in April, two new CNG buses, which will bring our total up to 8. They did have some big problems with the CNG. It was down for 52 hours when it was really cold there for a while. They're still working and trying to figure that thing out. Having a problem with the senior bus staff, like everything else, can't find drivers. The nice thing about the bus staff is you do not have to have a CDL to drive a senior bus. And you can also qualify to live in the housing that RTA has down at Lazy K, if you are a senior bus driver. We had an order for an electric bus to check it out, and it's been canceled. let's see here. RTA also is going to have 28 summer round trips, which is pretty phenomenal.
Pretty much so.
And let's see what else. United this spring is going to have one plane a day. It's going to be a midday turn to Denver. They would like to go back to two daily in June, June 2nd. They're also going to get a new plane. We're going to start having a whole new kind of plane coming in here that's going to pretty much eliminate all issues that we've ever had with weather and things like that. You call it a 175 or something like that?
Careful saying that on the record.
Well, I know. That's what they're boasting. So I'm just boasting that they're excited about it. I mean, Bill, whatever.
Yeah, Bill.
He's our connect, and he's like, this new 175 plane is like the Titanic. It will not have any issues.
Don't say like the Titanic. Oh.
They need to work on their marketing.
He didn't say that. No, but it's supposed to be a really nice plane. This new.
Put it in the sun. I'll put that in the paper.
Yeah. And that will go to two flights daily. So anyway, that's going to be exciting news. But anyway, no, that's it. RTA, I think they're doing well. Their maintenance building up in Crested Butte is just about finished, and they're excited about that. I ride the bus a lot, and the drivers are very good, courteous, professional, on time, and handle any issues professionally. I think they're great. It's all good.
Great.
And RTA is buying two more units at Lazy K.
Oh.
Yes.
So that'll be up to 7?
That's right. No, yeah.
Yeah, they have the townhome, the townhome, and then two more, and probably more if they're available, when they're available.
Great.
And there's still plans for the next to the school up by the library, or they ditched that.
I don't know if that's publicly out, but it's not happening.
The transit center, that's going to be future discussion. When did they?
I think that's scheduled for April 11th.
Okay, so I will miss that one, but that's, if we can figure that out, we brought up, if that would go at the rec center to extend the parking and they could pay for the parking and all that, we already have a parking problem there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the type of stuff we discussed. But
okay.
Over the last, 6.5 years that I've been on the board, what the people have come and gone, like Leah and all that was on the board, you know, they was wanting to try to get more of a circular bus for the community, and that will be on
it. It would house that also, right?
It would house that also, so that would help the community. And it would, that's, unless we have them purchase a property over by City Market, or Safeway, excuse me, and put it in a location like that, that's about the best we're going to ever get to get people off in on our Main Street or near it. You know, from people
and services, the housing, you know, the
and all the housing,
affordable housing and the college, and
you know, there's a lot of high density people around there. That's
would
the
it,
reason.
Would it be a good opportunity to just have a work session? They can make their pitch and just hear that from what
I think. Yes, and because I've been following this one closely, in particular, having received the memo from the PRAC board, mm-hmm. and their concerns,
right.
And you know, rightfully so. But I do think there's going to be a lot of conversations that need to be had, and points discussed that could shed light on things differently or what have you. But this is a big one, I think, and I think it'd be really important to do.
And maybe if we just kind of couch that first one as, let's hear what your idea and plan is.
The only catch is there's some matching funds that are time sensitive, so.
I think that's in 2025. Is that correct? I mean, it's a ways out there.
But they have to start putting in for it now.
Yeah, but
they can't put in for it unless they have a location.
They have to have a location.
Right. Or a tentative location. Locations mm-hmm. or locations. So,
but if that's driving the main thing, that's the weakest argument.
Well, I don't think it has to be necessarily a time. I mean, it's a
you
piece
want
of
to
the
do
puzzle.
It right. You don't want to. Russia. That's all I'm saying.
But
and
no,
I'm
thank
not
you for
particularly
that,
happy.
That's, I think that's going to be a pretty key one, in particular to what you're saying, that in-city route or
circulator.
Whatever, circulator, thank you.
Circulator.
I think we'll want to pay close attention to this one.
And if that's not going to go in that area, or possibly will, but we don't know if we can come up with alternative, but I agree with people like Leah that was on it before, you know, when I first got on, if we could get that someplace near the downtown area, it could help the downtown businesses. And that's not ideal for Main Street, but, you know, people that do use it going to and from Crested Butte, stay up there buying groceries, and whatnot. So that's the way I'd like council to think.
Well, they've come up with a matrix, and this location definitely checks all the boxes.
All the boxes.
And the other locations, there's some really high points at the other locations, but none of them are perfect.
So I think we do have April 11th scheduled, and we can just kind of hear the...
And if we could fix, I can't think of any place in town where we wouldn't have a parking problem, but there, if we could extend the parking lot without affecting Phase 3 and then you do have that other parking across the street, too, that could be utilized and maybe redesigned.
And field space for the youth soccer was another issue.
Yeah, but that's how much, Dan, is that utilized, the youth soccer there?
In the fall and the spring, the U6 and U8 use those fields.
Could that
you ate?
Could that go someplace else, like to the ballparks or something? That was.
We're gonna get another acre of field space and lazy caves done.
Okay.
The really nice thing about having it there is that you have your bathrooms and other programs going on. Bus service, kids rent the bus there after school. It's been a convenient space for that.
Well, I think these are all points that we need to.
Yeah, we just need to kind of hear what the.
Work because yeah I think
the request is yeah. So that we can evaluate that formally and publicly as well.
Okay.
All right. Great.
Anything else from your book?
Yep.
Thank you. I've got a few three shout outs. The snow blast from Gunnison Trails was a blast. That was really well attended and seemed very successful. The local government 101 reception held last week or 2 weeks ago, also phenomenal, pretty solid turnout. Thank you all for being there and for coordinating, Erica. Attended the Chamber of Commerce meeting on Beau's behalf last Wednesday and just really sat in and listened, provided a little overview about where we are and some of our key areas of work at the moment, including the city manager position. Celeste was kind to connect me with a few individuals who she thought would potentially have people within their networks as potential candidates. So just sharing that out. And then last is a request on behalf of council for myself, and that would be for your support for me to attend the ICLEI Summit of Cities conference. This is being held in Denver, April 24th through the 26th. It is a free conference. April 26th through the 28th. This is a free conference that we've been invited to as members of ICLEI. I know that the county will have representatives there, and there are mayors and elected officials from over 15 countries and many, many states that will be there. Topics on the agenda, what really drew me in were energy, migration, mobility and transportation, housing and safety, and as well as climate and environment, democracy and inclusion, and healthy, vibrant communities and cities. So if everyone is okay with that, I will plan to attend.
Yep.
And I would just ask for budget for lodging and travel expense. And I guess food, I'll eat.
Sounds like a good swap for the CML.
That was kind of what I thought. CML doesn't quite align with my schedule. This is perfectly aligned with my schedule and gives a chance to meet some other folks. Okay. I see you all head nods. Yep. So great. That is all from my end. Does anybody have any closing comments, questions, or jokes? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned. We stand adjourned at 7:55 a.m.
and
p.m. 7:55 p.m. and reconvene in 15 minutes for our work session.
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Five.
Four.
We're back.